then hack it out with our axes, bag it, and drag it back here.
You aren't going anywhere, Colonel. You're too damned weak. Just sit here with JB and Dean. Christy and I will go in, check it out, and bring back the first load.
Watch out for the stickies. They like to hide in the low rad spots where the badges don't give off much light. Be careful of cave-ins while you're hacking ore. When the glass comes down huge, and it cuts like a fucking bandsaw. And, yeah, we've got mind-burst mushrooms grown down there. They're one of the few things that seems to be able to stand the radiation. It's just them and the rats. The rats live off the shrooms, but they'll take a piece out of your nose if you fall asleep in the wrong place.
Right.
You'll find the mushrooms sprouting up any place there's a ledge. If you breathe in their spores, you'll start hallucinating in a couple of minutes. If you breathe too much, you'll fall into a fit. If you do accidentally get stoned on the stuff, you're as good as dead.
A trooper talked to us on the way in. He told us about this third gender business. What do you know about it?
The women. The officers had some genetic engineering done before they came over from our Earth. The men are scared of them, and with good reason.
Gabhart's lips, which were crusted over with a mass of scabs, cracked and started bleeding a thin line down his chin. Though his eyes were almost shut, and his voice was losing its power, he kept talking.
When I first arrived at Ground Zero, the troopers spoke to me because I used to be one of them. As far as the Sheehees are concerned, the male troopers are expendable, like us slaves. They take better care of the troopers, of course, because they're more difficult to replace, you know, because of the training and so on. It's the same old story. Everything's a product. Everything has a price.
Do you think the troopers would turn on them if given the chance?
No way of telling. These are conglomerate mercenaries, not five regulars. Their allegiance is to themselves. I'd say they'll stay loyal to the officers as long as they think they might end up paying for a rebellion with their own blood. If the odds change, and it looks like there's no penalty, who knows?
JB and Ryan had a dozen other critical questions that needed answering, but before either could speak, Gabhart's head drooped to his chest, and his mouth went slack.
Oh, fire blast.
He's not dead, Ryan. Just unconscious. I can see him still breathing.
From what Mildred told me, he may never wake up. He's on his last legs. If he comes out of it while we're gone, JB, get as much info as you can from him.
Gotcha.
Ryan and Christy picked axes from the pile at the bottom of the cart. The tools had wickedly curved points at one end. The other end was flat, more like a hammer. The reason was obvious. That way, two axes could be used to split apart pieces of nuke ore too big to lift. One acting as a wedge, the other as a sledge. They also each took one of the roughly woven bags.
Dad, be careful.
Always, son. You too.
Ryan and Christy stepped into the nearest side shaft. The opening was as wide as Ryan's arm span, and a couple of feet taller than the top of his head. It looked as if it had been hacked out with a laser. There were no tool marks on the walls, just smooth glass. It almost looked polished. And the floor, walls, and ceiling all met at near-right angles. Inside the shaft, the level of available light dropped even more.
Look at our badges.
They were definitely glowing brighter, but they weren't bright enough to light up more than 20 feet of tunnel ahead. They'd only walked 30 or so yards when the darkness in front of them began to dance with green lights. From deeper in the fissure, three slaves appeared, single file, dragging the loaded ore bags behind them. Their badges were like tiny beacons on their chests. The blurry circles of light they cast bounced and quivered as they walked. Ryan and Christy put their backs against the wall, their axes ready to fend off a sudden attack. No words were exchanged, not even a nod to acknowledge one another's existence. After the slaves had passed, Ryan and Christy stood there, staring at the glass wall opposite. Their badge lights penetrated the solid mass, allowing them to see deep inside. There were shadowy, mysterious shapes, distorted by folds and masses of bubbles, obscured by irregular, unidentifiable pieces of large and small debris.
Gaia knows what all's in there.
Yeah, it's a treasure chest of busted-up shit.
Around a tight turn that would have blocked an ore cart, they came across the first of much smaller intersecting tunnels, obviously hacked by hand. As they approached, a man's head and shoulders popped out of the narrow hole in the wall. Before they could reach him, he'd scrambled out with his ore bag. The stranger threatened them with his axe, its pointed tip worn into a tiny mushroom, like an exploded bullet.
Easy, we don't want your ore.
The slave scuttled past them with his bag, his back to the wall, fainting with short swings of his weapon. His arms and hands were a mass of barely healed cuts. There were deeper gashes across his forehead and cheeks. His trousers and shirt were slashed from glass edges. His spindly thighs were visible between the long tatters. Ryan knew the looks of wild animals caught in traps or mortally wounded, awaiting death. He knew the looks of human beings as they faced that same terrible fate. But what was in the slave's eyes was something even more desperate, even more despairing. The man's expression said that he knew his life wasn't worth living, but he couldn't let go of it just yet. As the two moved deeper, the available light became nil, but their badges grew brighter, casting 40 instead of 20 feet ahead of them.
Wait.
I thought I heard something too.
Let's take this one slow.
As they advanced, at the edge of their green circles of light, they could see a single dim figure. Moving forward, they caught the frantic rise and fall of the axe as it was wielded two-handed. A slave was hacking away at the face of the right-hand wall. Puffs of glass dust exploded at every impact. Chunks of glass lay at his feet. The slave turned to blink at their badge lights. His nose and mouth were uncovered, and snot swayed in long strands from his chin. His pupils were mere pinpoints.
You've got to help me get her out. We've got to save her.
Save who?
Hold on, honey. Hold on.
Who is it? What is it?
My baby. She's caught in there. Can't you hear her calling me? Can't you see her? Are you deaf? Fucking blind?
When the man lowered his axe, Ryan looked into the crude crater he'd fashioned. Much deeper in the matrix was a dark, elongated shape. Something was entombed.
That's definitely not a baby, mister. It looks more like a big rock.
Her name is Sharla. She's only 4. She calls me Poppy Dearie.
Okay.
Idiots!
Foam bubbled from the corner of Poppy's mouth, and as he swung his tool, saliva flew in sticky streamers along his neck. The big hunk of glass tumbled to the floor.
I'm coming, honey! I'll save you!
Out of here, now!
Christy and Ryan turned to run back the way they'd come. They got no more than a few strides before the ceiling and walls crashed down behind them.
Ah!
There was a rush of wind, and Ryan took the stinging blast of glass fragments on his back, protecting Christy with his body. When the dust cleared, they found the man partially buried in jumbled pieces of glass. His head was connected to his body by the slimmest thread, a single strip of muscle and skin. His still jetting blood glistened black on the edges of the glass. The cave-in had exposed the entombed object that had cost the poor fool his life. It wasn't a rock after all, but a dirty void. Nothing. A gap left by a section of pre-dark wooden log or telephone pole that the new Keat had charred to ash.
Poor bastard didn't know what he was doing. Had to be from those spores Gabhart warned us about.
Yeah. There must be some of those mushrooms around here close. Keep an eye out. We don't want to stumble onto them by accident.
They found the mind bursts a bit farther on. In the green light, little button shapes clustered along the seam of the floor and wall. They were dainty looking, with small rounded caps. Ryan noticed a peculiar sweet but sharp smell they seemed to give off. Holding his bandana tight around his nose and mouth, he bent closer and saw some of the caps had been gnawed down to stumps. Scattered about were dozens of tiny, half-moon-shaped black turds.
Like Gabhart said, the rats must eat them.
And their crap fertilizes the next crop.
They moved past the corpse caught in the glassfall and continued down the tunnel until they found an intersecting shaft that was stand-up height. The space inside it was much narrower. There was hardly enough room to swing their axes, but their badges glared like searchlights, so they knew they were in the right place. Working together, carefully, they excavated the base of the walls, using their axes to crack big blocks of it free. The ore wasn't all that dense. Their bags were severely stretched by 60 or 70 pounds of the stuff.